Welcome to Near Death Experience Podcast. I'm Chaz Hathaway. My voice is starting to come back, so I'm going to try a reading today. And this is from a book I just found yesterday at a thrift store. I have not yet read it, so I don't know what it's about. I skimmed through enough to know where the experience starts, and it looks like, gratefully, it's one that starts right at the beginning in chapter one. And it is called A Greater Tomorrow, My Journey Beyond the Veil by Julie Rowe. So this is a Discovery Together book. I don't know what I'm about to read, so let's discover it together. Chapter 1, The Day I Left My Body. It was September 28, 2004. I was hospitalized for a variety of health issues, with the verdict still out as to what exactly was causing my various symptoms. I had partial paralysis on the left side of my body, migraines, mood swings, fatigue, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, walking seizures, and a few fainting spells. I also suffered from severe memory loss and cognitive impairment. The labs that came back indicated something was seriously wrong with my liver and other organs. I had elevated liver enzymes so high that doctors didn't believe me when I repeatedly told them I had never taken any alcohol, drugs, or anything to cause this imbalance. To top it off, I had not slept for several nights straight. September 28th was also the day my spirit left my body. This was the day when I went to the other side. I had the very real experience of visiting beyond the veil in the spirit world. That world is right here on Earth, just in another realm of sorts. This was a day I will never forget, a day which for many years has brought me memories of intense pain, as well as inexplicable joy beyond measure. This was the day I was met by a very kind older gentleman, John. He was one of my distant ancestors. John told me I was welcomed there and could stay for a little while, but it was not yet my time to die. He told me that in time I would need to return to my mortal body. He told me there were some things he needed to talk to me about, and that he was going to show me pertaining to my life, past, present, and future. He told me that after I was shown these things, I needed to go back to my life on Earth. John explained that I would be given further light and knowledge about God's plan for me and my family. He told me that I would show many things pertaining, or that I'd be, let's see, I would be shown many things pertaining to me and my family and some of my future mission in life. He explained that I would be shown some things that would also affect many of God's children here on earth. How does one explain what it's like to visit the spirit world? I think that is a very good question. My first thought in response to that question is, seeing is believing. There are truly no earthly words available to be able to describe the feelings of peace, love, calm, and warmth I experienced while there. It was all-encompassing. It was as though every fiber of my being resonated this love, peace, safety, and security. The closest thing I can even compare it to here on earth is the feelings I get when I'm in one of the temples of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The closest feeling would be the love I have oft times felt from my family and loved ones, multiplied thousands of times over and over again. I'm going to take a quick break there. Clearly, we now know what faith she belongs to, so I hope that you don't think that I am reading this because of her association with the same church as I belong to. I did not know when I got this that she was affiliated with the church. Like I said, we're discovering this together. And I will give the disclaimer as well that people tend to have experiences and draw the associations based on what they know on earth. So if they're Buddhist, for example, they'll say it was like being in a Buddhist monk temple. If they're Catholic, they'll say it's like a monastery, or whatever is what I suspect, I should say. So I'm not trying to convince anybody of anything. I try to be very non-partisan as far as religions are concerned, though I do also stand very much by my own faith, so I'm not trying to diss it either, but just want to give that as a disclaimer here. Okay, so back to the text. According to hospital records, I was in the hospital for 5 days, the first 2 days of which I was asleep. It is during these 2 days, while asleep, that I was given the blessings, or the blessing and privilege of visiting Beyond the Veil. It was during that time that I had the opportunity to see and visit with many of my ancestors who have passed on. I was also given the opportunity to meet several other amazing individuals, some of whom have been well known throughout history. Let me back up a bit. I feel it is important to give you a little more background information of the circumstances I found myself in prior to going to the hospital. Now, I'm going to pause there and jump ahead. I may skim through to see if it really does seem pertinent to our podcast, since we are limited on, you know, I can't read you this whole book, basically. And I just want to jump back into the experience, so 1 second. Okay, so it looks like she, being Julie Rao, was having some medical issues, but they were also having money issues, and so she wasn't going to the hospital to get herself checked out like she should, from what she said. And she found herself dreaming that she was in a hospital emergency room and dreamt of specific people and so forth that were real people or turned out to be real people, something to that effect. It was clearly something of a knowing kind of experience. And she was given basically kind of premonitions and so forth. And then she says, I tried to explain to Jeff, that's her husband, what I was feeling and some of what I had dreamed. He was, of course, very concerned, so he did his best to care for the children. He sent me to lie down upstairs in our bedroom to try to get some rest the following afternoon. I had never felt so tired in my life. I went upstairs to lie down and finally get some sleep, and as I felt myself falling asleep, the strangest sensation came over my body. I felt disconnected. The veil became very thin, and all around me I could see was surrounded by, all around me I could see I was surrounded by the most beautiful women, all wearing white. I say that though they were beautiful because although they were of varying shapes and sizes, and most were elderly in their years, they absolutely beamed with light, which surrounded them and filled my room with a radiance I had never seen before. A few of them I recognized as relatives who had passed on. They were watching over me with great care. Seeing them there and feeling the disconnection going on in my body between my spirit and my body, I was afraid to go to sleep. I was afraid I would not wake up. I was afraid I was dying. I was very anxious and did not know how to explain to Jeff what I was seeing and feeling. Every time I dozed off to sleep, I would see my spirit start to leave my body. It took all of my mental effort and physical strength to keep myself from floating away. So I would get up out of bed, make my way downstairs to where Jeff was tending to the children, and try to explain to him that I couldn't go to sleep right then. He continued to encourage me to go back upstairs and go to sleep. Every time I attempted to do so, the same thing would happen. Eventually, I went downstairs and collapsed on the living room floor. Jeff, of course, became even more concerned. He took my temperature and brought me a drink of water. I immediately threw it up. I finally fell asleep there on the floor for some amount of time. I do not know for how long. Once again, I started dreaming of the hospital scenes. Okay, then sickness continues. Okay, eventually they go to the emergency room. Thank you. I'm like, go to the emergency room. Okay, let's see. Timing on. Okay. Let me pause for a minute and I'll see if I can pick up where we're outside the medical aspect of this. Okay, it's a very interesting story so far. It looks like she has, her experience is unique because she's kind of in and out of the veil. She's not having a, you know, pop out of the body and then go to all this stuff. She keeps having dreams and things just, well, okay, let me just jump back into it. I should say she has dreams, or she goes to the hospital and she's seeing people that she had seen in her dream. She, as far as I can tell, she'd never seen them before in her lifetime, but now she's seeing them, which, you know, I mean, she's just had dreams of, I mean, experiences of seeing angels in a room, dead relatives and so forth. And yeah, she's afraid she's dying. So they get to the hospital and they're, you know, working on her at, it looks like they're, you know, kind of taking care of her and so forth. Anyway, she says, as I fell asleep, I could still see those from the other side watching over me, and I felt peaceful. Right before I fell asleep, one of the nurses came in to check on me. I clearly remember what she looked like, and I remember she asked me if everything was all right. I answered in the affirmative, and she left the room. I was left alone in the hospital room with ministering angels taking care to see that I was comfortable and okay with what was going on around me. As I closed my eyes, all but one other woman from the other side of the veil left the room. The last thing I remember, I was singing myself to sleep to the hymn, "The Spirit of God." I started to dream. In this dream, I began to see scenes from my life played out. After some time, I don't know for how long, I awoke briefly. I was disoriented and confused. I didn't completely remember what was going on or why I was in the room. I began to feel the same sensation I had previously at my home when I had attempted to sleep. This time, however, I was so relaxed from the medication that I did not fight it. I felt my spirit rise up out of my body. I found myself standing next to the bed, looking down at my motionless form. I looked out the window and into the night sky just as the sun was beginning to rise. I felt my spirit slowly rise toward the ceiling of the hospital room. I rose higher and higher. That's the end of the first chapter. I think I will jump into the next chapter, but I want to take another pause here. I'm sorry for all the interjections here. It partly is due to my jumping around, and we're not going to continue reading much more simply because, you know, I want to encourage you to get the book if you want to read the full experience. This is an interesting one so far, partly because she is kind of in and out. There's no leave the body, hey, I'm right here, why can nobody hear me? And it's like she keeps falling asleep and having these dreams that fit the description of a near-death experience. This seems kind of rare in my studies, I guess. Most people talk about their experience being so vivid that it's nothing like a dream. It's more like the experience is less dream than their real life. Also, it's interesting to me that she's not freaking out about seeing dead ancestors and seeing angels and so forth. She seems to know what they are, unless she's talking in retrospect, you know, and at the time she was weirded out. But seeing dead ancestors and, you know, talking about knowing these ministering angels are near, she's clearly not entirely, I mean, she's uncomfortable with the situation because she knows she's possibly dying, but she's not like, what the heck is going on? And that could be one of two things. Like I said, one, she could be talking in retrospect. She, you know, the way she talked about the first part of her experience, which I believe was a later part of her experience. She seems to be kind of jumping in and out of the story. She does say, I just glanced at the back of the book. Now it says, A Greater Tomorrow, which is this book, is her first book. And so it's written less in a narrative fashion and more in an introspective fashion. So there is that possibility that she's kind of ruminating on this while talking about it. The other possibility is that these kind of experiences, I'm not trying to give a plug for my church again, but the idea of ministering spirits, of being in some sort of contact with dead ancestors, and the idea of an afterlife, a pre-earth life, and so forth, are very familiar doctrines in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. In fact, some people who have near-death experiences end up joining the church because they say, well, this is a church that seems to match what I've learned, from my experience. But and so that may have something to do with it. It may be that she's like, okay, this is the stuff I've heard about in church, and I'm not sure if she was converted to the gospel as an adult or if she grew up in the church. I haven't read enough to find out yet. But just a couple of interesting things there. Another thing that I'm wondering about, this is a question I have for you guys, because maybe you know, she keeps talking about this strange sensation. Now, I have heard in many near-death experiences of a strange sensation. Some say a vibration, some say it's like electricity running through the body. And here's my question. I have had many lucid dreams in my life, and they're not anything that I would consider to be real in the least. I mean, I remember as an example, riding a roller coaster, going on a road that was more like a roller coaster, and then going to this place where there was this giant blown up Spider-Man balloon that was supposed to be a bad guy, and I was trying to beat it up or something. I mean, it's obviously a ridiculous situation. Very characteristic of dreams, but it was a lucid dream. I was like, whoa, I totally know this is a dream. I can feel it and so forth. So basically I'm a lucid dreamer. I have that experience probably once a week or so. Sometimes in my lucid dreams, there is a tingling sensation. I don't know. I started calling it a vibrational state because it's like, and lately, and probably more since I've started studying near-death experiences because of people speaking of astral travel and so forth, which I don't know much about other than what I've read about in near-death experiences and so forth, and people saying that it is possible to voluntarily leave your body. I don't know. I don't actively astral travel, let's just put it that way. But I do lucid dream, and sometimes I will wake up in the night in a lucid state, and that vibrational sensation that is sometimes there in lucid dreams is there. It feels like something is vibrating inside of me. It's not uncomfortable at all. It actually feels kind of cool, kind of a warm sensation. And there is a sense sometimes of getting up that feels like stepping out of my body. I don't want to say that's what it is because I just don't have the experience to know what it is, but there is that vibrational sensation, and it feels so lucid. It feels so real in terms of the wakeful level of my mind. And yes, I can pass through walls and windows and so forth, but it's kind of like passing through a weird jelly kind of a thing. So anyway, I don't want to get too deep into that. I'm just curious, really curious. I keep hearing about these sensations that seem to match the description of what I feel in these lucid dreams sometimes. And I'm curious, those of you who have had near-death experiences, if you could tell me if that sounds like the same kind of feeling that you had during your near-death experience, or maybe just prior to it or something. I'm just curious, because if there is any kind of spiritual sense about it, it would be nice to know so that when my time comes someday, if I start feeling that, I can have some idea, oh, okay, yeah, that feeling, maybe it's time or whatever, I don't know. That's totally off topic. I'm sorry about that. Let's go back to the text. Okay, she says, Within what seemed to be just a matter of minutes, I found myself in the middle of a beautiful field filled with the most brilliant green grass I have ever seen. Gorgeous flowers surrounded me, and I heard beautiful melodic music. I was surrounded by beauty everywhere I turned. I was soon met by an older gentleman with blonde hair and blue eyes who introduced himself as John. He told me he was one of my ancestors and that he was here to help me, there to help me. I immediately recognized him as someone I knew, but I could not tell you exactly who he is or how I came to know him. I do know that he is a ministering angel and one of my many guardian angels. He is the man who gave me the tour beyond the veil that I'm about to share with you, and who also, for years, had shown me things in my dreams. He continues to be an important person in my life. Since 2004, I have continued to have dreams about present and future circumstances. He is often the messenger who teaches me during these experiences. I recognized his voice. I would recognize his face if I saw him again in real life, but for some reason I do not remember ever being told who he is exactly. Apparently, he is not something I am supposed to know right now. I walked with John across this beautiful field, and we came upon a most beautiful, incredibly beautiful lake. It was crystal clear and of a silvery blue color that sparkled in the bright sunlight. We stood together on the shore, and John encouraged me, to gaze into the water. In the lake, I could see all manner of fish swimming around. There were varieties I have never before seen on this earth. There were varieties of every kind in several different sizes, shapes, and species. The lake was so clear, but so deep that it went beyond my vision, and I could not see the bottom, as if it went on and on forever. The water was seemingly alive, and the fish and other organisms that lived in this water were full of energy and intelligence. I felt as if they were communicating with me. I could sense they too felt the love and peace that I felt. It quickly became apparent to me that every living thing, the grass, the flowers, the trees, the animals, all that I saw were able to communicate with me and with each other telepathically. There was a feeling of true joy and completion emanating from the water and from the intelligences all around me. It was exquisite. It was made known to me that this was living water. John talked to me for a while on the shore. He asked me, "Do you know where you are?" "I don't know for sure," I responded. He asked me what I saw, and when I looked in and at the lake. He talked to me about the Lord's plan for me and for his children, specifically about the fact that I was there in the spirit world for a brief visit, and that the Lord had a plan for me. It was not yet my time to return to the spirit world permanently. Okay, I'm gonna go ahead and stop there. I feel like my voice is about done for today. This is a really interesting one so far because, remember the episode a little while back where we talked about perspectives on the level of detail given in near-death experiences. Some people can take the few moments that they're out of their body and write an entire book about it, and all the transcendental awe of oneness and so forth. And then others can say, yeah, and then I talked to God and he said this, and then I suddenly was back in my body, and it's kind of like, whoa, what did that feel like? What did that look like? Tell me about his eyes. Tell me about, you know. This is one of the experiences, it seems, where she leans toward the side of less detail. She talks about angels in a room. She talks about speaking to this individual, these living water, where that actually seems to have life of itself. These fish, she doesn't seem to describe them in detail, but just to say that incredible variety, everything's beautiful. And it's both awesome and exasperating at the same time. And I'm sure my interruptions have been exasperating and frustrating, and I'm sorry about that. But, you know, when it's a discovery together thing, things, you know, occur to me in the moment, and I know I'm going to forget if I don't speak them up, so I'm sorry about that. But yeah, she's giving what details she's giving, but, you know, it's like she'll just brush over something that I'm like, whoa, wait, I want to hear about that. Which, in my mind, I don't want to say it validates it, but it gives a little bit of credence to it in a way, because, you know, if this is her first book, obviously she's not an experienced writer that knows all the details of narrative form and so forth. I sense that in her writing, but not in any negative way. It's not like she's not a good writer. It's beautifully written so far, and I'm not here to critique the book. No need to. It's beautifully written so far, but the experience and the way she explains it is, you know, if I didn't know about near-death experiences, I'd be like, well, wait, what? I'd be a little confused, but I think she's writing this just from some of the jargon that she uses and so forth. I think she is writing it for members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So there are terms and so forth that are in there that that are a little bit jargony, and so I think her audience will understand it. But anyway, again, I'm not trying to critique the book, but I am interested in the experience and how she had a lot of build-up to her experience. I would be interested to talk to her to ask if she'd had near-death experiences before, or a near-dying experience, let's put it that way, because the fact of her seeing spirits, of hearing things and so forth, of having those premonitions beforehand, it's not uncommon for the veil to start breaking down before the death takes place. And another thing occurs to me, she could have said that this was a dream as a way to dampen the experience. Now, you might ask, why would she dampen the experience? This is something that's just occurring to me. Members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints consider sacred experiences very sacred, and they are often discouraged from sharing them, not because that's crazy or that's of the devil or anything like that, but rather that's from God, that is very special, unique to you. Please keep it to yourself or share it to very close family or relatives if the Spirit directs you, but don't blab it to the world, if you will. You know, don't throw your pearls before swine. Don't declare this to people that are going to just laugh at you and call you crazy and so forth. It's not a way of protecting the person. It's a way of maintaining a level of sacredness. And by her saying, this is a dream I had, it could be kind of a way of her saying, now, I'm not saying this is an experience, that this is what I'm saying it is. I'm saying I had this dream, and it just, maybe it was something, maybe it wasn't. Well, from what I can tell from her descriptions, it sounds very, very consistent with a near-death experience. And I suspect that she would, if speaking to her directly, she'd probably say, you know, I don't think it was a dream at all. I really don't think it was. You know, that she just says it that way as a way to, you know, dampen it a little bit. And maybe that's one of the reasons she doesn't give as much detail, too. And I can totally, totally respect that, not wanting to share something because it is so sacred. It's kind of like, for those who are not familiar with that mentality, it's kind of like if you had, well, let's just say at the time that you propose to your spouse and you're telling people the story. Maybe you talk with your fiance now or whatever. You are having this deep, intimate conversation that's, you know, not talking about, you know, whispering sweet nothings or whatever, but talking about very special experiences that you have together that are unique to the two of you that you don't want to share with others, that you want to be special between the two of you. You want to have this sacred, you know, thing between you that's just for the two of you. That's the closest thing I can compare it to for any who don't have a sense of deep religious sacredness, okay? And many in the near-death experience community, they may not be as familiar with this being related to spiritual things simply because they're used to hearing people's deeply, deeply, deeply personal sacred experiences. And I'm not one to go and pry them out of people, and I don't like to do that. I will give them opportunity to share, you know, oh, do you remember anything from when you were unconscious? And if they say something like, oh, I remember a bit, but I'm not sure I'm ready to talk about it, I'm going to say, okay, I totally understand, not a problem, you know. And so I try to respect that sense of sacredness. That's really important to me and to a lot of people. And so, you know, when you're talking to people about near-death experiences and wanting them to talk about theirs, if there are moments that they say, I don't think I want to go into more detail about that, it could be for a number of reasons. One, they're not sure you're going to believe them. That seems to be the more common thing. But a lot of times it's because it was something so sacred to them, so special to them, that they feel like this is something that is between me and God, and I don't feel like I should share it with other people. And I totally respect that. And there may be some of that. Sometimes the dampening of an experience in that way, creating a buffer, you know, somebody will say something like, well, I don't know if this was a thing or if I just imagined this, but often they'll say that as a way to say, this may not be, you know, I'm not trying to say that I'm some kind of prophet that's here to declare the word. I'm just saying I had this special experience that really affected me. I, you know, anyway, I think we'll go ahead and wrap things up. I am excited to read the rest of this book. Again, it is called A Greater Tomorrow by Julie Rao. That's Rowe. Maybe it's Rowe. I'm not sure. Subtitled My Journey Beyond the Veil. I just found this at a thrift store. It looks like it was printed in 2014, so it's not too old. Published by Spring Creek Book Company. I just, you know, I haven't looked to see if you can find it on Amazon, but I suspect if you Google it, you'd be able to find it. It does have a link to, or a URL for springcreekbooks.com if you want to look that up. And before we finish up today, I want to reiterate that we have a, I don't know if you can call it a hotline, a phone number, a voicemail phone number that you can call to leave a message for either questions or if you'd like to share your experience. I would love to share that on the podcast. I just checked the voicemail and we have the first message here today. So I'm going to go ahead and share that. Before I give out that phone number again.
Hi, Chaz. I don't have an experience to share with you, but I just wanted to let you know that really appreciate what you're doing. It's really, you're doing a great job. I know you paused your podcast. You weren't sure if people were listening or appreciate it, but I meant to try and get a hold of you, but just know that there are people out here who really, really appreciate the fantastic job that you're doing. The cadence in your voice and the way you deliver it and put it together and your commentary is really wonderful, and I needed to let you know that, and It's something I look forward to every day. I get up, I look to see if Chaz posted another podcast. So please, please don't ever stop. Thanks. Bye.
Oh my goodness. Can I just say thank you so much for that call? I almost cried when I listened to it. So touching and so, you know, you just don't know if you're making a difference with the things you're doing in the world. And to get a message like this just absolutely made my day, encouraged me, want to keep going with this. So thank you so much for your message. It means the world to me. It really does. So if any of others of you want to leave a message, to share your experience, to ask a question, or whatever you'd like to say, the number is 970-NDE-CAST. That's 970-633-2278. And again, there will not be any person that picks up. It will simply say something like, you know, Google Voice, please leave your name. You could choose whether or not to leave your name, and then it will allow you to leave a message. And I don't know of any upper limit of how much time it gives you, but I would love to have as long as you want to share. So feel free to share as much as you would like. So with that, we will go ahead and wrap up. And again, you guys, it's all about love, and I am feeling it from this growing community. I'm feeling the love that you have for each other, for the people who have these experiences. I feel it for you, and I hope that this kind of sharing, this kind of learning together is going to help to wake up the world to a spiritual state that allows us to see each other as children of God, as brothers and sisters, as fellow spiritual beings, loving beings on this very challenging, difficult, painful world, on this adventure together. Can you imagine if everybody understood, at least was familiar enough with these things and about life reviews and so forth, that they knew there was going to be life after this, that it would continue on, that they are loved beyond measure, and that we just kind of need to be there for each other and help each other along. It would not make depression go away. It would not make anxiety and pain and suffering go away. But what it would do is open the door to love in so many more ways. And we would be able to turn to the stranger and say, hey, I'm sure you're going through a rough time, when we see that they're suffering and say, this has got to be rough, but hey, if you need anything, here's my phone number, give me a call. If I can do anything, let me know. And I would like in some way to be able to do that for all of you. And you are doing that for me. The messages that you send, the feedback that you give, it keeps me going. So again, thank you so much, all of you, for listening.